Welcome to Living in Hi-Fi. I'm Steve.
And I'm Flissy. This is a podcast about records. Today's album is Eon by Dead Can Dance, originally released in 1990 on 4AD Records. Our copy is a 2017 remastered re-release catalog number CAD3639.
So I guess 4AD has recently decided to reissue the entire Dead Can Dance catalog on LP.
Yay!
And so I decided to go ahead and buy all of the re-release LPs, which I guess joins our copies of all their albums on SACD, as well as, I don't know, many of them on CD. So we have many copies of Dead Can Dance.
I feel like I should mention that, like, we had a teaser last week that we were going to do another Western album. And
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So, like, we had, like, a high fidelity moment where we, like, pulled out all of our records because we could not find the album that we were going to feature. I mean, I don't think that was why we reorganized, but...
Well, that was
partially why we ended up pulling everything out.
Because we couldn't figure out what genre we had... We had filed it under.
Yes.
And so we ended up being like, well, we need to refine our genre classifications because apparently they're too broad and also too narrow.
Yeah, something like that. And so, like, eventually we did find the album and we're like, wow, like, this is not what we remember and not even worth talking about. And then it, like, and then we listened to a couple other things, and it turns out, like, I was thinking about this, and I'm like, I think maybe this job of podcasters that we have of, like, reviewing albums is probably a lot like being a restaurant, like, food critic, where, like, there's probably, like, remarkably good meals and remarkably bad meals, and then it's, like, the really mediocre ones that you're like, what do you even say about that?
Yeah, I know that. I mean, one of the publications I read from time to time is this magazine, Stereophile, and they get a lot of criticism because pretty much all their reviews are good. But the reviewers, they have responded to that criticism by saying, you know, basically we choose to review the things that spark our interest, which already are probably promising. And, you know, if things are really mediocre, like, pretty much nobody wants to, you know, read about that. That's not going to make for a very interesting review. So I guess there is something to that, that it is really hard to say something interesting about something that's ultimately pretty mediocre.
Yeah. This is, like, not even a tease. Like, you're really not missing anything by not hearing those albums that we listened to on Sunday.
Yeah, so we just had to pick something that we
knew that we liked, and we knew that we have opinions about, and you might be interested as well.
All right, so Flizzy, why don't you tell us about this album and what it looks like?
So I dig the like the re-release of the sleeve. Like, I don't know what the original release was like, but this is, like, it's printed on matte cardboard, which is a little bit of a novelty, I guess. It doesn't have, like, that shiny coated finish, and it features on the cover a piece of artwork by Hieronymus Bosch, and it is from a triptych, and it features these lovers that are in this little bubble. And then on the back it has like a close-up of their feet and just a small track listing with Dead Can Dance on the top. And ours has, like, a pretty nice inner sleeve, though. I mean, because we are the audiophiles that we are, we always replace it with a static-free artisanal sleeve, you know. But it's a nice inner sleeve, and it has, again, like, some detail of that Hieronymus Bosch painting on it.
So Hieronymus Bosch is the artist that I was trying to remember, I don't know, a few weeks ago when I was talking to you, Flissy, that it was the artist who was featured in that movie of which title I can't recall.
Oh, that's really helpful. Okay.
Yeah, but friend of the show, Sid, is the one who recommended that movie to me. So,
did we watch that movie together?
I watched it. I don't remember if you watched it with me or not.
I don't remember watching anything with Hieronymus Bosch featured. I think I would remember that and probably have nightmares.
Well, anyway, If Sid can remember what the name of it is, he can let me know. So anyway, should we get to our first clip?
Yeah, what is your pick?
All right, my pick is the, let's see, I think it's the fourth song.
Yep.
Yeah, the fourth song on side A. It is called Fortune Presents Gifts Not According to the Book. So let's take a listen.
Fortune presents gifts not according to the book. Fortune presents gifts not according to the book. When you expect wishes, it's true. When you expect flutes, it's whistle. What various paths have followed in distributing honors and possessions.
All right, Felicity, what do you think of this?
I, in spite of having listened to this song perhaps 100 million billion times over the past several months, whenever it was on your rotation, I still find like the very intro to this piece like among the most beautiful musical introductions, which maybe was that the reason that it was on repeat for so long. And I think this is a good example of like the general feel of this album. It, I think, is a piece of 17th century poetry that the lyrics are taken from, and it has, I think, definitely like a little bit of this medieval feel that is reflected in the cover art with like the dulcimer and this very sort of esoteric, symbolic poetry kind of sung in this sort of chant-like way.
Yeah. Well, so, okay, so the reason that I had been listening to this song like a million times recently is that it just sort of, I don't know, I mean, it was just sort of serendipitous, I guess. I had been making a few sort of changes to my audio system, and so I was doing some comparisons, and someone online wanted a comparison of, you know, two pieces of audio equipment that I have, and so I was doing some listening to try to give them some...
Oh, yes, I now remember this particular test.
Some analysis of what the differences between these two pieces of equipment are. But anyway, I just happened to find that, like, you know, just happened to be listening to this song around that time, and I thought it was a really good test because one of the things I really like about it is, you know, sort of at the beginning, you got this drone sound, and, like, I feel like this piece has got, like, a really good sort of sense of space about it. And you sort of get this feeling of the ambience or whatever of the room that it is being recorded in. And I don't know. I mean, actually, like, I've been doing, you know, a lot of comparison between our analog system, you know, with our turntable and our digital system. And for a while, I think that our analog system was just, you know, clearly superior. But somewhere I think that changed, and I think actually I prefer our digital version, though I'm not exactly sure that this LP and the SACD version that we have are you know, the same mastering, but I really like the SACD version. I would recommend it. But anyway, back to this song. Yeah, I like it. I mean, I find it interesting that a lot of the Dead Can Dance songs I like have Brendan Perry's lyrics. For a couple reasons. I mean, one, because Alicia Gerard is awesome, and her nonsense made-up language is, I think, really right up my alley, because, to be honest, when I listen to music, I don't really listen to it for the lyrics. I just listen to it for sort of the vocal sounds. And so there are a lot of songs which I really like that I have really put no effort into understanding what the lyrics are about at all. Yeah, and so I don't know, it's kind of interesting that some of my favorite songs are the ones with male vocals when I don't typically like, you know, as by and large, music sung by men, though there are several exceptions. And yeah, I really like the Hammer Dulcimer. I, you know, this, like, as I mentioned, was using this for my system evaluation. So I think that this is amongst the pieces that is really, you know, sort of audiophile gold. I mean, one of the other Dead Can Dance albums, Into the Labyrinth, I think it is.
Yep.
Toward the Within. I can't always get those two.
Oh, wait.
Toward
the Within.
Yeah, it's a live recording. And the first song on that, Rakim, I think is really one of the most, you know, well, I don't know, just one of my favorite songs, period, but also one of the best for just, you know, evaluating system quality or whatever.
Yeah, if you are ever at, like, any of the audio conventions where we are and we have a chance to, like, demo something, like, we are the weirdos bringing in the Dead Can Dance to test out the systems.
Yeah, to, you know, to have a break from everybody else's Take Five.
Oh, my gosh.
Whatever, Steve Miller Band or whatever they're playing.
Norm Jones.
Yeah. Anyway, one of the things that I like about the lyrics in this song, though, I don't know. There's this lyric, she gives awards to some and penitence cloaks to others, which really reminds me of this episode of The Simpsons, the House of Horror 7, where the aliens Kang and Kodos are running for president, and Kang is trying to, you know, just say platitudes to the audience. And so first he says, abortions for all, and then everybody boos. And so he says, like, abortions for none, and then everybody boos again. And so he says, abortions for some, miniature American flags for others. And I don't know, the I guess the phraseology of that, she gives awards to some and penitence cloaks for others, reminded me of that Treehouse of Horror episode.
That's so random.
So that was why this song was my pick.
Wow. Okay.
All right, so what can you tell us about Dead Can Dance, Lizzie?
So, Dead Can Dance was formed in 1981 by Brendan Perry in Melbourne, Australia. And he was born June 30th, 1959 in Whitechapel, England. And his parents eventually moved to Australia when he was a child. And he founded Dead Can Dance with Simon Monroe, who is a drummer, Paul Erickson on bass, and Lisa Gerard, who is, of course, the vocalist that we mentioned.
Hammer Dulcimer,
multi-instrumentalist extraordinaire. So I guess he met Lisa Gerard as part of this little band movement in Australia. So I guess this was like a post-punk movement in Australia, and that's where they met. And I'm trying to figure out, like, how did they get from this destination, like point A, where Brendan Perry was like playing guitar and bass in a punk band, to being this like kind of out there, like world fusion, post-punk, slightly gothy, slightly classical-ish situation. And I never really got that question answered to my satisfaction, except that like, I don't know, why is anybody interested in anything? Like, they just are two people who are interested in like art history and you know, early music, like medieval European music, and are interested in instruments from different places. So I guess Lisa Gerard bought one of these like Chinese style hammer dulcimers at a thrift store and just like figured out how to play it. So and I was reading through some of their old interviews and biographical stuff that I could find, and there was an interview where there was something that was written up on the 4AD website, someone that worked for 4AD, I guess, like one of the artist representatives who had done a lot of interviews with them over the years. And he had asked her some questions about the music. And I guess it sounds like she just got tired of answering the questions. Like, I don't know why you have to keep asking me all these questions. Like, the answer is in the music itself, which, like, I get that. Like, there is this quality to their music that I think is like kind of timeless and implaceable. And it's kind of like symbolic in a way that I think like it's really relatable, even though it's also sort of like strange sounding at the same time, you know?
Yeah. I mean, so I don't know. I mentioned before, I think it's what Toward the Within that was the live album. And that album, I don't know. I mean, to me, has always, it always been one of my favorites, but also always been kind of full of mystery to me. Like, I didn't know anything about Dead Can Dance the band other than just having listened to their music. And I'm like, what is the deal with this? Like, why is she singing in this like nonsense language? And like, I mean, their stuff, it just seems so unusual to me,
mm-hmm.
or unconventional or whatever. And I found out that there was like some, I don't know, DVD or whatever version of this concert. And I was like, I have got to watch that, see what it's like. And actually, I mean, it's fine. It's informative. It's interesting. But actually, I think it's one of those things where I think having found out more about it, it actually somehow like lessened my enjoyment of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I mean, I think I'm largely like moved past that. But like actually having watched it, I was like kind of depressed afterwards. Like I was like, this is not what I expected. So I guess I can sort of understand her sentiment that is just like, let the music speak for itself. And yeah, it doesn't really matter, you know, what their reasons or rationale are for it.
Mm-hmm. So this album, Eon, was released in 1990. And it was, I guess, at the end of Lisa Gerard's and Brendan Perry's romantic relationship. And it seemed like their intention with this one is like really, like just generally capturing a sort of non-specific period of time, although it does certainly have a lot of influence on stuff from the like 14th century to about the maybe 17th century, 18th century.
Yeah, I mean, it has a lot. It reminds me a lot of the sort of early music that I've listened to. You know, I have that Songs for Terpsichore or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I have this other album, L'Espagna, or whatever. That's, you know, I guess what 14th, 15th century type of stuff.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, it sort of has that, I don't know, sort of that feel to it, even though I think that they're playing it in a sort of a different way.
Yeah, definitely a modern kind of way and like not aligned with any particular era or instrumentation or anything. It definitely has their own flavor and creativity and some original songs on there. And at this point, they had moved from Melbourne to England.
Yeah, I thought that, I don't know, I don't remember my history exactly, but I thought that they, like, they had, I guess, what, some record deal in England, but only Brendan Perry and Lisa Gerard were willing to make the move.
Is that's that right? Okay. Yeah. So I think it was maybe like their second or third album that they relocated to England. And then after this album, Lisa Gerard, after they separated romantically, first she moved to Spain and then she moved back to Australia. So they did continue to collaborate, but it was kind of a long stretch before they put out another album. And then what is it? Spirit Spirit Dancer, Chaser. Spirit Chaser, that came out in 1996, and the band separated in 1998 officially, but then reunited in 2005, and they did some live recordings, and that's when the era of the Toward the Within was released, and they did some more other collaborations, and their most recent touring, I think, was in 2015. So they're both still active in other projects. I know Lisa Gerrard also works in film. She's recorded a lot of vocals for soundtracks, and she also has worked as an actress in some films of her own. So they're both still definitely active with their own solo careers, and it will be seen whether or not Dead Can Dance continues to make things together. I think this album was... I'm not sure if this album, but future Dead Can Dance albums were recorded in this church studio that Brendan Perry owned in Ireland. And I guess he recently sold that, and he is relocating back to England again. So I'm not sure what the status of that is right now. Yeah, so still making stuff. Good re-releases coming out.
Yeah, check out 4AD's website. I'm sure the stuff is probably available elsewhere also.
Yeah, we'll have a link to the 4AD site on our show notes. The re-release that we have is still available.
All right, let's see. Well, why don't we get to what your pick is? What'd you pick?
My pick is As the Bell Rings, the Maypole Spins, and it's the last track on side A.
All right, let's take a listen. I mean, I guess I can see why this song is up your alley, Flissy. It's got the sort of the reedy sound that I think is, for some reason, in your wheelhouse.
Yeah.
I think it's bagpipes that are played by Brendan Perry's brother, Robert.
That's right.
But I don't really know anything about Robert Perry other than apparently he plays the bagpipes.
Yeah, that's the extent of my knowledge as well.
I mean, it looks like he may have... also done something on Serpent's Egg, but as far as I can tell, you know, his stuff with Dead Can Dance and then maybe some musical production is like the only thing that I know. But anyway, I like it. It's good to showcase of Lisa Gerrard's nonsense singing.
It's not nonsense, it's Gaelic.
Well, well, fine. But anyway, it's a good showcase of her singing. How about that?
Okay.
And I guess the thing that makes me curious from the song is, like, what's the deal with maypoles? Like, it's people dancing around a pole with some ribbons, and I guess you make some patterns, but, like, why do you do that?
Oh, I don't know. It's pretty. Celebrate spring, the dancing, you know.
I don't know. I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't know. I personally do not. I'm not well-versed in the history of the maypole.
I mean, it's like maypoles are something that it's like I had an awareness of, like, growing up. It was, like, mentioned in school or something, but I, like, never understood, like, why people would do that or, like, never actually, you know, saw anyone dancing around a maypole.
I could go to the fairy festival.
I guess I could.
Next spring, and they do the maypole.
Yeah, so I'll have to keep an eye out for that. So, Pussy, why'd you pick this?
So I picked this song. You pretty much called it. One, it's Lisa Gerrard's phenomenal singing voice.
I will note that in your notes, you have made up language as the one of your notes.
I do have that in my notes. But I just wanted to mention it. Oh, not because it is made up language. She's singing in Gaelic. It's a traditional Gaelic song. But one of the things she does is sing like, and she, it is like, it is a made up language. She sings sounds, but they have meaning. But they are of her own device. Like they're, it's not like she's just making random sounds. They do have a meaning to them. And this particular song does have a meaning because it is in Gaelic. So I do like that. I do like her just really beautiful voice, and it's showcased so nicely. She sings kind of solo at the very beginning, and then the bagpipes come in, and it's got this like really nice, slow, driving rhythm. And it's kind of interesting because, like, you know, talking about maypole, like, I think spring and happy, but, like, this is, like, it's a little bit subdued. Like, it's almost sad. It's a goth maypole. They're wrapping it up in some black ribbon.
All right. What did you think about this album overall, Fussy?
I think this is, oh, it's so hard. I'm like, this is one of the better Dick Can Dance albums, but I'm like, well, they're all really awesome, so... but I do think that, like, I think that this one is in a really complete package. Like, I think they have really captured the feeling of an eon. Like, it's got, it feels like it has a complete story, and it feels like it goes through an arc over the entirety of the album. So it has, like, a nice flow, and it feels like it's from this sort of medieval period of time, but, like, almost like an alternate universe kind of way. Like, it doesn't sound like classical music, but it does still have like a medieval flavor, which I think I'm thinking back to like when I very first started belly dancing, and like Dead Can Dance was definitely early belly dance jam because it has like a little bit of this exotic implaceable flavor to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, the song was awesome.
So I don't know. I mean, it's kind of hard for me to separate Dead Can Dance from just my feelings about 4AD in general. That I feel like, I don't know. I mean, one of my other favorite artists, Lush, is also on 4AD. And I feel like 4AD was like a real, I don't know, it's even hard for me to explain, but just had sort of like this, I don't know, very like, I don't know, sort of larger than life feel to me when it, in like the, you know, the, I guess the, from the music in the 80s and 90s. I mean, they also had like the Pixies on there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, in this album, for some reason, this one had, I don't know, I would say I largely overlooked it. But for some reason, more recently had just happened upon it and, you know, really got into it. So I'm glad that I sort of discovered or rediscovered this album. And I do think it, you know, it's good. It's got sort of like, I don't know, what do you call it? Like sort of like these environmental sort of interstitial pieces, you know, it's like,
mm-hmm.
It's got some tracks that are just like, you know, like a minute or whatever that just sort of add to this sort of like environmental feeling, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Which I kind of like. I like it when albums, they, you know, they're, you know, sort of conceptualized as an album, and, you know, there are things in there that sort of like bring the whole thing together. And so I think that this album has that. And I don't know. Yeah, this, I think, I mean, their stuff was always sort of like gothy and dark and had influences from early music. But I think that this album in particular has sort of like a more overt sort of medieval music feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, yeah, I like it. So I would give this album 2 thumbs up. Well, I'll give it 1 thumb up of my own, and I hope that I can borrow your thumb for the other thumb.
I will give this a thumb up as well. So that does make 2 thumbs up.
Yeah, so definitely worth checking out. But all of Dead Can Dance is worth checking out too. And I mean, they have, I guess in the maybe 2000s or something, released some kind of best of compilations, which are also maybe a good place to start. So for more information, you can visit our show notes at livinginhifi.com/episode/61. As always, you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at Living in Hi-Fi. Or for longer correspondence, you can send us an email at feedback@livinginhifi.com. And next week, well, I think we have the opportunity to play for you something that we had been hoping to for a long time and maybe mentioned in an earlier episode and finally were able to obtain. So stay tuned for that, and thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.